started the recording of the show again here for another technological reason, which if anyone listens to me regularly, you will eventually figure out I'm not a huge fan of technology. That's not totally true, I suppose. I like technology in my cars, but I really get tired of a lot of the things that, you know, like updates available, you know. So what do? They freeze your computer up, screw it up, force you to do. I don't understand people with like iPhone 6s that are like, well, I haven't done an update in 6 years because I know it'll ruin my phone. Well, I don't know how you do that because whenever updates come available, they like shut my life down. They're like, you take the update or die. I'm like, well, I guess I'll take the update. Anyway, so there's my story. So you're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. The recording's jumping in a little late, talking about the election, which appears to have now been fully swung to the Biden and Harris camp. They claim California gave its 55 electoral votes today to the Biden campaign. Folks, they won and they won and they won. And the bottom line is they won. They won in a way that you can't believe. And what I was discussing is you've got, there's no doubt there's election fraud. Our Supreme Court justices, Supreme Courts, they won't touch this. Folks, we are in the darkest, dire times. All of these justices are political. They have no courage. They know the price of seeking the truth. You are now in the People's Republic of America, because that's what they always call Soviet or communist type stuff. Folks, we are being crushed, okay? This whole concept that we're now with Biden coming in. Well, we're gonna merge with the world, and we want to be like the world, and they're our friends, and we've got so much evidence of the Biden camp. I mean, levels of corruption, folks, that are like, I mean, burning hell stuff. Excuse me, but I'm serious. This stuff is like, what? The Bidens get what? 10 million, 20? I don't even care. 200, 300 million of the Clintons, 500 million. Who cares? You're selling out the United States of America. We've given power to these people. They've sold us out. They're that good. They have become professionals at political theft. I met a guy in, we'll say the Southern Pacific or South Pacific. Believe my wife and I last Thanksgiving went to for Thanksgiving, we always have a big family event, and things weren't working out. And so my wife, bless her heart, she knows I've always said, let's go on a trip for one of these vacation or holidays. So she took me to the Beverly Hills Wilshire, pre-COVID, by the way. The Beverly Hills Wilshire for Thanksgiving dinner was terrifically wonderful. Beautiful hotel. I met celebrities, you know, I didn't meet them like big time. I met some interesting people, though. I had some interesting experiences, because this may really surprise you, but I really enjoy mingling with people, especially when I can find out different things. So we did that, and then we flew to an island in Fiji. And when I was there, I met some neat folks. It's called Turtle Island. It's a private island. It's run by native Fijians, and it was just a neat place. And while we were there, they had all the world's top travel journalists, like 5 or 6 or whatever there was, maybe more, 10, I don't know, that they'd flown in. And then so these people were the biggest and the best for the biggest newspapers around the world, and I met one of the top Formula One race car drivers, and I had fun. And one gentleman I met, he's got some specials on HBO and everything, and his name's Chris Graham, and he was up there. He was a 7th-floor FBI guy, and he was in charge of white-collar crime back during the Clinton era. He had some stories. He was the one who extracted the, I think, whatever his name was, Foster, the body that showed up in what I thought was Central Park. This is how I find out who he is. I don't know how we got to it. Oh, he brought up the Epstein scenario, and he told me, he said, well, that was definitely not a suicide. Well, I'm like, duh. And he's like, and I'm like, well, how do you know? And he's telling me all the particulars. And then we end up talking about somehow the Clintons. He was in charge of white. Anyway, I said that. He was in charge of the white collar crime. He hadn't told me that quite yet. And I mentioned that Foster, I can't remember his first name. That was the big obvious one the whole world saw was bad. There's an old video out called The Clinton Chronicles. And at the time, I believed it showed 99 perfectly coincidental and very politically expedient deaths of people all around. Now, it's easy to think of this on a hypothetical level. These are real people that are dying. I mean, real people. And the Foster guy was... he showed up. I thought it was Central Park, and he said, no, it wasn't. And I said, no, I'm pretty sure it was. He goes, no, I'm pretty sure it wasn't. And we had this little thing, and it was kind of funny, but he said, well, I'm the one that took him out. And he told me the name of the park, and then he began to tell me the story a little bit. And he explained, you know, what I'd already heard. There was no bullet, no blood. You know, when the guy was getting ready, I think it was Ben Foster is what sticks in my mind. But he was ready to testify against the Clintons. And ironically, he shows up dead in a park, no blood, no bullet. And this gentleman that I had met said, all he said, he didn't take a political side. He told me it was impossible to do the investigation on white-collar crime. He said the Whitewater mess with Clintons was beyond anything you can comprehend. And he said the body count kept piling up. And then I heard, or he told me about the last, apparently, whatever it was, person to testify. This is kind of creepy if you think about it, but there was a guy, and we've seen the DNC when in the last election when they had somebody leak that the DNC, a.k.a. Hillary Clinton and crew, had completely stacked the deck against Bernie Sanders. Not, you know, what's weird is this is what the people wanted. I don't want any of them, but Bernie Sanders was the rightful owner of that position, or at least he should have got that, or he should have got an opportunity. So they proved, without a doubt, well, somebody leaked all these emails and internal information of how they stacked the deck against him. Then the guy who, okay, all of a sudden a guy gets killed in a certain location in Washington, D.C. Drive-by shooting, big accident, right? When my wife and I were back there, we went to that exact location. I walked it at night. I walked to the exact time he was killed. And I'll tell you what, eerie. It was this kind of this weird merger of a couple roads, well, streets, whatever. There was no cameras. It was unbelievably just eerie. And you could see where it could happen so easy. And I saw things in that city at night. We walked around late. And, I mean, I saw things, you know, there's rumors of cities under the city. I saw it in this location where he was killed about a half block up on the other side of the street. I mean, there's these huge buildings that are unmarked. And you can't, I mean, you don't know what they are. Someone does. And behind one of them, there's this grate, you know, like they have grates in the streets, kind of on the sidewalks, but this is off the side. I look down in this thing, and I'm telling my wife, get over here, check this out. I'm looking down, literally, five or six stories down, And there are levels down there. And there's lights, nice fresh lights operating, these great big bulbs inside of these nice, you know, well taken care of, very fresh. Clear down, and I'm literally 5 or 6 stories underground, I see a person walk by, and it's clean and neat and nice down there. And then I was talking to my wife, and all of a sudden I see a person kind of come back and look up, and I jump back. I don't know what I'm getting into. And then I'm talking to her, and then all of a sudden we hear some odd noises and whatever, and I won't get into all the detail, and we get the tar out of there. I couldn't hang out for it. But I'm telling you, the story of the cities under the city in D.C., I'm buying it. Which, if you have people on the inside, and you have, like, the gentleman, was his last name Rich, who was the guy, was the DNC leaker, and I think Julian Assange came out, he's WikiLeaks, and he basically didn't say it because he said they never reveal their sources. He's the one that let all the information out about what happened, but he basically was very angry, and he disclosed that this gentleman is the one. He didn't say it, but he said it about that this Seth Rich was basically the DNC leaker, and within days, he's shot dead, walking down the street at night, random drive-by shooting, no investigation, case closed. And what this gentleman was telling me, it all started with the Epstein case. He said this is how his whole life went. He said the last guy that was supposed to testify against the Clintons, when they got someone, they had to pull him under a witness protection program, and that they had to, well, they'd lost people that were in the witness protection program were still dying off. So he said with this last gentleman who was supposed to testify, they had him in a secure location, and they had FBI all around him. He'd eaten, he was taking a shower. And he said they even had the FBI watching the FBI, unbeknownst to the FBI. So the FBI agents watching him were being watched by other FBI agents. So this is a double-layer operation, you know. And all of a sudden, the guy is in the shower, and oh, golly gee whiz, he dies in the shower the morning that he's supposed to testify. Who got at him? How'd they get at him? You know, no autopsy results. Just a random heart attack. Right. Okay. So this, my friends, is the amount of power and control these people have and the extent to which they'll go to. You can go all the way back to JFK. He was not killed at random. He was killed because he was ending the Federal Reserve. He was dipping his foot into the financial well-being of a lot of people. When a Federal Reserve note, fiat currency, is made, there are at least 36 separate banks that get a piece of the pie, a fractional piece, teeny minute fraction. When you're talking trillions of dollars, a teeny minute fraction is a really good thing. So when you start to mess with them, I had another friend who's very connected in the money world at that level. And as he said, you can say whatever you want about the Fed, but and they'll tolerate it. But when you start to impact their existence, they will take you out. They took out JFK. And if anyone wanted truth, if you look at LBJ's lineage, what he did, he killed JFK's legacy. And LBJ went down as this great president. Minorities think he's the most wonderful president ever because he did the war on poverty and he increased welfare the first time ever by fivefold. Well, guess how much poverty went up? Fivefold. When you hand that stuff out, that's what you get. Kennedy was absolutely opposed to all that stuff. He believed in a man's right to work. He was old school Democrat, a people's president. He got the presidency, I think it was over Nixon, because of his handling of Martin Luther King's incarceration in maybe Selma or whatever. I don't have all that down perfect. But Kennedy played his cards right. Things landed in his lap. From that point forward, we have had continued corruption in that office. Power. The conservatives get taken out. Liberals never do. They maintain control. They claim control. When they're in office, they blame it on the right. They say, oh, it's too hard because the conservatives ruined it all. When the conservatives are in office, they say, oh, we can't get anything done because the conservatives ruin it all. They have this nonstop, never-ending mantra agenda narrative that just doesn't quit. We are now sitting in a situation where we have, I believe sincerely, we've had an election stolen at multiple levels. We still have the runoff election in Georgia. Folks, we're in trouble, okay? We are in trouble. I'm being very honest with you. We are in trouble. If you think 2020 was bad, wait until 2021. I am seriously concerned, and I did some research this weekend, not a lot. I mean, well, whatever. Too much enough. And I am like, I'm alarmed, and I'm like, well, do you really want to be this pessimistic? And it bothers me to be overly pessimistic. I've always discussed economics over time. I mean, lately I've been very political, but I have discussed economics because that's kind of my thing. The money is my thing. I don't keep up with news as tight as some people. And, you know, people get addicted to that phone feeding them all kinds of information. And I talked about that movie a minute ago, Social Dilemma, which is on Netflix for free. You gotta watch it because it's got all these high power execs that are, you know, no longer there. But I mean, people that are like the chief of, you know, the top dog at Facebook, and then the, you know, president of Twitter prior, and Uber, and big names, just crazy beautiful resumes. Everybody speaking on this thing is worth billions. And they're laying it out, and every one of them is like, there's a huge problem. They're terrified of one phrase. If you watch the beginning of the movie, they're asking 8 or 10 of these people, or whatever there is, maybe 12, I don't know. And they, one at a time, so what is the problem? And they all get tongue-tied. And one guy says, well, there's one specific force, you know, and then they move around and they show the different responses. It's Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook. Now, these other companies have hired these guys to monetize the program. And so what they say, like I said, if you are not paying for the product, you are the product. And what that means is they watch what, not just what you look at, how long you look at it, what you look at next. They track everything you do. They throw out or throw up bait all the time. They try to keep you on because the longer you're on, you're the product, the more they make. Advertisers pay for your eyes, okay? And then they get into true social engineering. They are controlling your behavior. They're controlling your behavior at a level you don't even realize. And people are getting addicted to this stuff. I'm in my 50s. I'm not addicted to it. I hate it. I hate email. Everyone's like, oh, you know, I get so hooked on my email. I probably would if, you know, years back, I've had, you know, this tech company, SiteCrest, that we've worked with forever, a long time ago, you know, threw a curveball at my email, and it's always just been, it's been difficult to control and clean out the spam, and we've got the spam programs, but, you know, in order to just kill something, you got to go through so many steps. It's terrible. But if you have Gmail, you don't have that problem. They even watch what your favorite colors are and send you stuff in the colors you like to bait you in. How about this? You give them your phone to verify all this stuff. These things are happening. No one can say how or why. You will find yourself, and I know a lot of listeners are not probably overly attached, but there is repetitive experiences, of which I've had as well, where you speak on your phone about something in particular, a product, place, or thing, and suddenly the next time you're on your phone or computer, up pops information on that specific item, coincidentally, right? They would never admit it. They have control of your mic, control of your cameras. They won't admit it. Don't, you know, that you can't apparently prove it. On the inside scoopers can. And when they need to leverage certain people at certain levels for certain things, they have it down to a science you can't even fathom. It's a level of psychology that is beyond normal comprehension. They know everything you've looked at. They track everywhere you go. And I mean everything. They know if you're a man, they deduce what kind of woman you prefer. You know, blonde, blue-eyed, dark hair, really dark hair, Hispanic, light skin. I'm serious. Body type, everything. They apparently gather all this stuff from everything you click on. You don't even realize you're doing it. I mean, it's that crazy. So, where am I going with all this? Near the election, Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook has over 1.4 billion members. He, on Facebook, he truly controls the world. He's Dr. Evil. How do we contain and control this? Everything he does internally is private and very proprietary. People have signed so many documents, they can never disclose any of it. In this movie, if you will, a documentary, they describe their concerns about various things going on, essentially the ethics of it. But the problem is, it is social science. You can't, how do you control that? Do you say, well, you can't try to manipulate or persuade people's behaviors or activity? Well, at that point, you're outlawing marketing in general. Marketing is attempting to persuade and control your activity and behavior. That's what it is. If I run an ad and I say, you know, Coins Plus has been in business 20 years or 25 years, and, you know, if you ever want to buy gold, whatever, whatever. I'm trying to persuade people, if you're going down that road, come and see us, right? I'm trying to persuade you to come here. So you can't outlaw that. So where do you draw the line? And then you have all these internal protocols that are all basically built into powerful algorithms written by people that not only are incredibly brilliant, but they've trained their minds in this arena. And a lot of these top dogs have been involved in all these specific consortiums at some of the biggest name power colleges in the world. Stanford's been very involved. These are top dog geniuses that are learning how to control you and I. So before the election, they sent out, that we know of, by the way, only from an internal leaker at Facebook, they sent out, at least in one case we know, 14 million plus reminders to vote. They sent all those out to liberals who leaned their way and were people that fit some kind of a profile that they're very likely on the fence or they hadn't already voted. If you recall, all that stuff was tracked by Facebook. They have all these surveys and they watch all your blogs. They track if you say you already voted, when you voted, where you voted. I'm not kidding you. I mean, and trust me, this is so far over my head, I can't even comprehend it. It's baffling. So they can literally swing, and then they can take the conservative voters and send them and filter the information that they get to highly favor Biden and Kamala. And if you think about it, this whole thing with now, they're not going to let any information out that they consider to be fake news, but it's not fake news. Fake news travels, by the way, folks. What they call fake news travels at 7 times the rate of regular news. Okay? So they're supposedly the arbiters of what's right and wrong. So they're controlling what you can and cannot see. If you want to feed your suspicion of false behavior, of what they can, if you want to feed your suspicion of negative behavior towards the conservative belt or towards Republicans or towards Bible believers, they will block you and they will channel you into a moderate view. They will feed you articles. They have thousands of brilliant PhDs whose job is to psychoanalyze you and users in general. And you have to think about this. They call you a user. There's only 2 businesses in the world that refer to you as a user. One is drug dealers. 2 is social media. So technically, they're feeding you a drug. What does a drug do? It's mind-altering. It influences your thought process, your activity, and your behavior. And people get addicted. I think young kids are at the greatest threat. They do this stuff where they have all these girls, young girls can take pictures, and they use these little filters to make them look real pretty, a lot prettier, and they post a picture. And all of a sudden, Facebook has all these little emoji icons that they give you the option. It says, oh my gosh, you're so beautiful. Gosh, how lovely. Oh my, you're so, you know, and this and that. What a sweetie, and all this stuff. And everybody goes, clink, 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 clink. And all of a sudden, all this positive stuff comes floating at you. Nobody has the option to say, well, you're a dog, you know? I mean, and so it feeds these people's dopamine. They're getting their satisfaction from this computer. They're getting all of this public approval, and it creates an addiction. If you're feeling bad about yourself, you can, you know, get into these little circles and you can send this stuff out and all of a sudden all these people are going to go, oh, how amazing. And, you know, people put out, oh, it's my 30th anniversary. See, I'm talking like an old guy. But, you know, and people go, oh, congratulations. What a gorgeous couple. You're so fantastic. Well, great. That's the way we should be communicating. I mean, positivity is terrific. But people get addicted to this. They have you hooked. the longer you're there, the more ads you get. The more they target and focus these ads, they try real hard, and they're apparently very good. They track every click, every follow through, everything you buy. And so that they are taking a percentage, the price per click that they charge, and that's how it works, is an algorithm that's constantly adapting. And it is, and they're looking for a specific percentage of your profits in specific businesses. They know from heavy research and all these PhDs what the average profit margin is in every business, and they take a percentage of it. They want a third of it. So they track this stuff, they change the pricing per click, and they do all these things. I know businesses, a couple in particular in our industry, that do mammoth amounts of business online. They're hooked now at a level where they're spending millions. I know one guy who said he spent over $6 million on Google Ads in a year, which means he made a lot more money. Google sets it up so that they're doing your business work for you. You just have to do the proper follow through and execution, I guess. I don't play that game. What's crazy is we're so short staffed. We're one of like 16 dealers approved to ever to sell on Amazon, and I'm so short on people, I can't even get it, you know, going, which is another story. But it's not that I want to be part of that crazy consortium. It's just where the world's gone, frankly. So with what's happened with this election, and I am very concerned. Poor Donald Trump, he got it handed to him hard. He had no clue what was coming. The Republicans had no clue what was coming. They're not that good of fighters. They don't know how to fight. How do you fight someone who fights dirty? The best defense is a good offense. The left, in this case, had the most phenomenal offense I could imagine. Crazy Joe Biden. I mean, they've always known, you know, Joe calls himself Lunchbox Joe. Like, he's just one of the boys. He's just a hardworking union guy. Not true at all. He's a mobster. That's why Obama brought him in as his VP. He knew he was corrupt. He knew he'd do anything that was necessary. Obama's part of that whole Soros, movement. And Saul Alinsky mentality and all these things that are just, they're committed to win at all costs. And they push the envelope. If you haven't learned one thing, I am so tired of these mock investigations. Oh, Hunter Biden's being investigated right now for whatever. It doesn't matter. Nothing comes out of it. If you even look at the impeachment hearing, it was all a kangaroo staged joke. They tried to take Trump out, but it was all done for the media. Without the insane bias of the media, that impeachment trial wouldn't have gone anywhere. Trump got whacked around, beat up hard. So here's the deal. If you think 2020 is bad, you got to watch what happens in 2021. I would tell you right now, honestly, secure your wealth in precious metals. I don't know the ultimate outcome of this thing, but there is a new normal coming. It's going to be very uncomfortable. People adapt. They apparently believe enough generations have passed. I think they push some stuff through way too fast. But we acclimate. There's so many people that there's nothing you can do. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg literally impacts 1.45 billion people on Earth. I mean, really? That's 1.45 billion accounts. or individuals or whatever it is. I mean, that includes, you know, if you're impacting parents, you're impacting a family. If you're impacting a CEO of a company, you're impacting the business. They are leaning everyone very left, very away from the Bible, at a faster pace than ever before. Somewhere in this whole thing, folks, is the beast system. I don't know how it all plays in, but the way the Bible's written, the beast system is a system of government or power that is corrupt. It is bad. And this is exactly what we're up against right now. We are facing down the barrel of the gun that's going to execute us. How do we fight? How do we know? What do we say? Who do we tell? Who cares? How much power do you have when Facebook has the power that they have? A relative of mine goes, well, you know, because of all this stuff, there's a lot of people leaving social media. And I'm like, well, that's funny, because they say the amount of people that have joined is up something like 20-some percent this year over prior years. So a bunch of the conservatives are jumping ship. They've weighed all the odds. You know how many people that have convictions? They don't give up. People are like, Twitter's corrupt. They're shutting down Trump. And how do you know that? Oh, because you're on Twitter. And, you know, the conservative approach is usually not to boycott. I think boycotting is bad. I mean, a lot of believers believe it, or a lot of conservatives believe it. I used to think it's bad. It can get a little bit excessive. I mean, there's companies, if they're doing immoral wrong things, you don't want to deal with them. Facebook has taken things all over, but it's kind of like Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, if you lived there at the time, you were adapted to that. That was your normal. And that's what we've got now. And the problem with Sodom and Gomorrah, when you look at that, Abraham said to God, no, don't destroy it. You know, there's got to be a lot of righteous people there, and I don't remember the exact numbers. But where did he start out at? 100 people? He's like, no, there has to be, so many righteous people. And God's like, okay, you know, show me, find them. And it's, you know, not exactly, it ends up basically, it says they, here we got some scripture. When the men got up to leave, they looked down towards Sodom, and Abraham walked along with them to see them on their way. Then the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and all nations on earth will be blessed through him. Praise God, right? Through Christ, for I have chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him. Then the Lord said, the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great and their sin so grievous that I'll go down and see if what they've done bad is as bad as the outcry that's reached me. If not, I'll know. The men turned away and went toward Sodom, but Abraham remained standing before the Lord. Then Abraham approached him and said, will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? What if there are 50 righteous people in the city? Will you really sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of 50 righteous people in it? And then he says, far be it from you to do such a thing, to kill the righteous with the wicked, treating the righteous and the wicked alike. Far be it from you. Will not the judge of all the earth do right? I'll carry on. And there's a strong point here. This is one of the problems with all this reparations thing that the blacks want, when they've shown that less than 1/4% of citizens in the U.S. may have had relatives in the past that were even involved in slavery. And one thing that's a Judeo-Christian policy and principle is you never make other people pay for the sins of others. That's why God says, I will judge a nation by my people, not by the non-believers. That's drug cartel behavior. When you make people pay for the behavior of someone else in their family or related to them or around them or whatever, it's not good, okay? It's bad. So, and God realized that. That's one thing about the Judeo-Christian belief system is that God respects that. And the Bible's very clear about that. He does say the sins of the father carry on to the third or fourth generation, but that's just natural law. God does not make a child pay for the sins of his father. That would be bad. Nor does he make you pay for the sins of your neighbor. Unless you're, an acquaintance or unless you're involved. An accomplice, I guess I'd call it. So then we go on. He says, the Lord said, if I find 50 righteous people in the city of Sodom, I'll spare the whole place for their sake. Then Abraham spoke up again. Well, now that I've been so bold as to speak to the Lord, and God's talking back to him, I guess, though I'm nothing but dust and ashes, what if the number of the righteous is 5 less than 50? Will you destroy the whole city for the lack of 5 for a lack of 5 people? If I find 45 there, he said, I will not destroy it. Once again, Abraham spoke to him. Well, what if there's only 40 found there? He said, obviously, Abraham knew this is a bad place. God said, for the sake of 40, I won't do it. Then he said, may the Lord not be angry, but let me speak. Abraham's just kind of backpedaling now. He threw out something, and now he's kind of eating his words. He goes, what if there's only 30 that can be found there? God answered, okay, I won't do it if I find 30 there. Like God didn't already know, right? Abraham said, now that I've been so bold as to speak to the Lord, what if there's only 20 found there? Now, this is what happens when we speak before we think, folks. God said, for the sake of 20, Abraham, I won't destroy it. Then Abraham said, well, don't get mad with me, God. This is my version. But can I speak one more time? What if there's only 10 that can be found? God answered, for the sake of 10, I won't destroy it. When the Lord finished speaking with Abraham, he left and returned home. I think we all know the rest of that story. The only one who was even possibly righteous was Lot, right? And I'll pick this up elsewhere here, and we'll see if I can get rolling on this. Sorry to hold you off. I had to jump to a new section because what I was reading didn't have the completion of all that scripture. So let's go down to, we're going to chapter 19 in Genesis now. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening as Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. And he said, this is the whole deal. I'm not going to read it. This is the whole deal where these angels came, and then the dirty men of Sodom tried to commit sodomy with them. Lot goes and tries to give them his daughters, which is terrible. He says, now behold, I have two daughters who have not had relations with man. Please let me bring them out to you and do to them whatever you like. Only do nothing to these men, inasmuch as they've come under the roof of my shelter my roof. But they said, stand aside. Furthermore, they said, this one came in as an alien, and already he's acting like a judge. Now we will treat you worse than them. Now think about it. They're admitting, they're raping people. This is bad. We're going to treat you worse than them. They're vile, filthy, wretched, abusive, cruel. And this is what sexual deviancy is, folks. This is what happens. It is seeing people as some kind of an object for your own personal pleasure. No animal on earth treats its own kind or its prey in even a fractional way as disgusting as humans. We can be disgustingly evil, okay? So, and he says he's acting like a judge. So they pressed hard against Lot. It will do to you worse than them. They pressed hard against Lot and came near to break his door. But the men reached out with their hands and brought Lot into the house. These men are angels, by the way, with them and shut the door. They struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves trying to find the door. How sick are you when you've been blinded by an angel and you don't walk away? You keep trying to perform this disgusting, vile, filthy act of violence, right? Bad news, right? So then the two men said to Lot, whom else do you have in there? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and whomever you have in the city, bring them out of the place, he says. For we're about to destroy this place. These are the angels. We're about to destroy this place because their outcry has become so great before the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, and said, up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he appeared to the sons-in-law to be jesting. They thought it was a joke. There's a spiritual problem, right? And he says, when the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you'll be swept away in the punishment of this city. But he hesitated, so the men seized his hand, these are angels, the angels again, and the hand of his wife and the hands of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him, and they brought him out and put him outside the city. Why was the compassion of the Lord on him? Because of Abraham, okay? Just as the compassion of the Lord was on Solomon because of his father David. When they had brought them outside, one said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains or you're going to be swept away. This is hellfire and brimstone's coming down, folks. Lot said to them, oh no, my lords. Now behold, your servant has found favor in your sight and you have magnified your loving kindness, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, for the disaster will overtake me and I'll die. Now behold, this town is near enough to flee to it, and it is small. Please let me escape there. Is it not small, that my life may be saved? He said to him, behold, I grant you this request also, not to overthrow the town of which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I can't do anything until you arrive there. Therefore the name of the town was called Zoar. The sun had risen over the earth when Lot came to Zoar. And then it goes down. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the valley and the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. And if you've ever been to the Dead Sea Valley, my goodness, it got whacked hard. It's crazy. But his wife from behind him looked back and became a pillar of salt. Now Abraham arose early in the morning, went to the place where he had stood before the Lord, and looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the valley, and he saw, behold, the smoke of the land ascending like the smoke of a furnace, etc. So basically, it came about when God destroyed the cities of the valley that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities of which Lot lived. And we could go on, but there's no time. Bottom line, folks, even Lot had been corrupted by this sick system. We're all being potentially corrupted. We need to, you know, in Revelations 18, where it talks about Mystery Babylon, it says, come out of her, my people. We have to keep our eyes off of this system. We have to be careful. We don't realize we're being corrupted all the time. Constantly turned away from God towards our sin, towards our flesh, and we're seeing massive shifts in people's beliefs and so forth. This, my friends, is what's concerning me. There were none righteous left. They'd all been turned. And there was some deep sexual sin. A dark spiritual cloud had come down over this place. We don't know about all of it, but we always assume everything was archaic and all this. Folks, there was some way they were brainwashing people back then. I don't know what it is. We don't even know what technology might have existed, or, you know, we just don't know how it operated. But it was devastated and destroyed. Sodom and Gomorrah was apparently a massive hub of trade. At the time, it was a big deal. And where it was located, it was a good access, and so on. So we need to just be aware of this ourselves. I wish I wasn't out of time. I'm kind of frustrated because I wanted to talk about 2021. I mean, we've got little time. We've got, in terms of our economy, 2020 is one of the ugliest years on record. 2021 is going to be way worse. Everyone's been focused on this pandemic, and the thinking is that once this pandemic's over, this crisis is going to be over and everything's back to normal. But as the globalists have been telling us since the outbreak, the world will never go back to normal again. They've seen to it. It's not because of the pandemic. It's because they will not allow us to go back to normal. There's this great reset many of you have heard about. The World Economic Forum came out this last week or the week before with this whole list of the new expectations. They want it to go on for many years. The globalists intend that every aspect of our lives will be changed into something that we do not recognize. And I've got so much more information I didn't get to today. By the way, the stock market does not represent the economy. There's crazy times now, and they're crazier ahead. Simplistically, folks, I'm telling you, I would secure your wealth in metals. You have a short period of time. If you've got a 401k, you can liquidate with no penalties and a stretched out tax basis. Don't get foolish with your money. Don't get greedy. You'll get toasted. You'll get burned. God tells us precious metals have been money from the beginning of written human history. There's no exception. I suggest and recommend stop procrastinating. You need to look at the overall. We, as believers, are going to be isolated. We're not popular, and things can get real ugly real fast. I beg of you, give us an opportunity. Take care. God bless. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.